Good morning, and thank you so much for coming to hear our presentations this morning. I noticed that the formatting is a little off, so I do know PowerPoint just a little better than it appears on the screen. Today I'm going to talk about 6 years' worth of data and experiences from our healthcare worker vaccination initiative. I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors. And I don't know what it says about a presenter when your co-authors are not in the audience, but if you see Robin Decker or Elise Booker, you give them a hard time, both from the Center for Immunization. So what is the Maryland Healthcare Personnel Immunization Initiative? It's a partnership between our coalition, the Maryland Partnership for Prevention, and the State Health Department. And it began in 2005, and at that time it was called the Maryland Healthcare Workers Immunization Initiative, and then last year we officially changed the name to the Immunization Initiative instead of Influenza Initiative. So it's a year-round effort now. Initially it was just during flu season, obviously, when it was called the Influenza Initiative, but now we do it year-round promoting vaccinations among healthcare workers. We provide grants and technical assistance and resources to support the participants' campaigns. We also collect data in a challenging effort to identify facility-specific vaccination rates. So these are the partners in the participants in our initiative. We've got local health departments, private providers, acute care hospitals, long-term care facilities, outpatient centers. Anyone who employs healthcare personnel are eligible for the initiative. And so we have our flu phase, and we launched that in the summertime, in the late summer, and we provide a toolkit that we update annually. We provide $1,000 grants, mini grants, to facilities to help implement their campaigns. And $1,000 doesn't seem to be a lot of money, but people really stretch it. We provide technical assistance. So Robin Decker at the State Health Department, she fields questions and assists people in refining their initiatives. And Robin has just entered the room. That's my co-presenter. She's going to kill me later. But Robin, I made a joke. I made a joke about you, so I have to say. But I was just saying your name too. So Robin provides technical assistance to our participants, and then at the end of the phase of the initiative, we ask people to report their immunization rates. This is the cover of our toolkit this year. In the contents, we have resources and strategies. We've got the VISs. We have vaccine administration records, consent forms, any publications that we think might be helpful to people in implementing their campaigns. And we provide a lot of document templates so people don't have to create things from scratch. This is a picture of our newsletter that we release periodically throughout our initiative, just giving people updates and information on healthcare worker vaccination. So how does our flu phase work? Our flu phase, we partner with professional associations to help to promote the initiative and recruit participants to the initiative. And then we have what we call registered partners. And so those are all the registered people, all the facilities that agree to participate. And so they complete a baseline survey giving us some basic information, how many healthcare personnel they have, what their plans are for promoting the vaccine. You know, do they give the vaccine for free? Is there a charge? And then throughout the initiative, so those people who register as registered partners, they're eligible for the $1,000 grants, and we evaluate the grants and award probably about 15 grants. All the registered partners receive a toolkit and then ongoing resources, but we also have the information for the initiative posted on the DHMH website and our website, so people can also access the information that way. At the end of the initiative for flu, we have facilities to report their vaccination rates and the successes and challenges of their efforts, and that part is a challenge, the wrap-up survey. But we have a meeting at the end of the flu season where we recognize excellence and healthcare facilities that have vaccinated the largest percentages within each category. So we have acute care hospitals fewer than 200 beds and greater than 200 beds and long-term care facilities. So we award recognition in each of those categories. So some examples of some of the projects that have been awarded in the past, people use the small grants for staffing, so if they're just having nurses to work a little later on the weekends, they pay for that. They provide financial incentives. We gave $1,000 to one long-term care facility this past season, and they gave out 10 crisp $100 bills. People who got vaccinated, they were entered into a drawing, and they sent us photographs of the folks smiling and holding their $100 bills. People use the funding to purchase vaccine, to reproduce educational materials, and sometimes they have parties or contests for the departments or divisions that have the highest vaccination rates. So then during the non-flu phase, so 2 years ago we officially implemented our non-flu initiative, and we don't have a more sophisticated name, so we just call it non-flu vaccines because it's our way to promote vaccinations that are recommended for healthcare workers that aren't for influenza. So we also, during that time, we offer a supplement to the toolkit that we released earlier in the initiative. And last year, we offered 2-for-1 vaccine matching grants, and I'll tell you a little bit about that later. And this year, we're doing something called the Best Practices Challenge. So last year, and through our partnership with DHMH, our state health department, we came across a bunch of extra vaccine. I don't know where it came from. It dropped out of the sky, and I said, oh, I know what we can do with this vaccine. So we released an RFP, and we agreed to match 2-for-1 vaccine that our participants would purchase. So if they bought one dose, we'd buy two. If they bought two doses, we'd buy four. So I'm just giving you an example of how it works, and it was for all vaccines that are recommended for healthcare personnel except for flu. So through that program, we funded 10 projects. We provided it to 2 local health departments, 4 acute care hospitals, 1 too small, 2 large, 2 long-term care facilities, and then 2 outpatient facilities. And we awarded a total of almost 1,400 doses. And if you count the one-third that they contributed, we probably were responsible for about 2,000 healthcare personnel being vaccinated for the 2-for-1 project. And this is just a distribution of the amount of doses that we awarded. Tdap was the most popular. I've got an asterisk by Zoster because, as you know, Zoster has been a challenge to get. So we have yet to award. Robin, do you know if we've given the Zoster yet? Awarded the Zoster? I keep hearing that it's going to happen, but it hasn't. I haven't received it yet. So this year, our coalition, we worked with our state health department on a project over the summertime, and it proved to be quite lucrative for our coalition. It was a contract that we entered into, and we earned a lot of money through it, and so we decided to spread the wealth through a very exciting initiative that we've got called the Best Practices Challenge. And it's a year-long effort that we've kicked off this spring. And we're offering up to $15,000 in grants to facilities that we deem best practices. And so there are 3 categories people can apply through. They can be deemed as a promising practice. So they'll create a proposal, and we'll look at it and see if we think that this proposal has potential. And if so, we'll give them $5,000 in startup money to implement their project. If they're an existing best practice, these are people who say, we're already doing a great job, and we need more money to make our projects even better, then we'll award them up to $5,000 to continue their project. At the end of the year, we'll look at people who said, well, we're in the process of developing a stellar program, and we want you to help us to make it better. We want you to help us to refine it. And so over those 12 months, this is what I was talking to you about, Ray. I want Dr. Strickus to help us with this one. We want to, at the end of 12 months, we want to look at the projects who said, we need your help in refining our program. They all have to provide performance measures. And at the end, if they've done a great job and we label them a best practice, we'll give them up to $10,000 to continue their programs. So, how it works, they can apply in one or several categories to be a best practice. If they're a promising practice and they get startup money and they think that they'll be eligible and up and running to the point that they'd be deemed a best practice at the end of the year, they can apply in both categories. And then the promising and existing practices, we're giving them the funds right at the beginning. Those are the ones that are starting up or continuing. And then at the end of the project is when we award the $10,000 to the enduring. I'll just skip through. I don't know if how am I on time? Oh, I better get moving. So because this is a new project, we don't have a lot of data for this, but we do, so I'm just sharing statistics on interest. 77 people registered for our introductory webinar, so we let people know that this project was coming, and 77 facilities signed up to hear about the introduction, and then when we released the RFP, we had 25 people to tune in to get guidance on the webinar, and so applications are due on the 15th of April. So now I'm going to give you an overview of the data that we've had so far. So when we started this in 2005, we had 49 people to enroll as registered partners, and this year we had 159. So it's tripled over the past 6 years, it's just kind of steadily crept up. And the distribution, the composition of the participants has changed, and it's hard to see, but we've got equal representation pretty much from all the different types of healthcare employers. These are the sad numbers. When you look at the registered partners who complete the baseline survey versus the folks who complete the wrap-up survey, we have less than 50% completion of that. It's a challenge. So this is a question that we ask at the outset. You know, if an employee declines a flu vaccination, do you make them sign a declination? And through the years, you know, the answers have been pretty steady, hovering somewhere between the high 70s to the high 80%. This year was a new question that we asked. We asked if people would make, what are their practices or policies for healthcare personnel vaccination? And 60% say they strongly encourage healthcare worker flu vaccinations, and they require a declination form, but you can see that there are other types of variations. When we asked people how will they promote flu vaccinations to their employees and volunteers, we noticed that in our early years they had different approaches. So you might not be able to see this very well, but in the past 2 years we've changed some of the categorical responses, asking them if they'll promote it using incentives or contests. And contests are growing in popularity, as you can see, and educational materials and using the management to encourage participation has grown as well. When we look at how people are offering flu vaccines, there hasn't been much of a change over the past 5 years. The majority of them offer a vaccine for free. When we talk about the barriers to their perceived barriers to their employees being vaccinated, the highest percentage or barriers or employee knowledge. They say that employees, you know, just don't know enough about it, or they have a lot of misconceptions, and that shouldn't surprise anyone here. And then we started asking them this year about non-flu vaccinations. What are their practices and policies surrounding non-flu vaccinations? 30% require some vaccinations as a condition of employment. 84% offer them for free. 55% of the respondents request declination forms. When we asked this year for the first time which vaccines are mandatory for their staff and their volunteers who have direct patient care, hepatitis B, about a third require hepatitis B, a third require MMR, and about a third require varicella. I've got to circle around Tdap because that's something that we've been focusing on a lot. And when you look at flu, there's only 18% that require flu as a condition of employment. When we asked about standing orders, again, they've got standing orders for Hep B, a lot of them, or the majority of them have it for flu, and then again, only about a third have it for Tdap, so I circled that because we've been focusing on that. When we ask about which vaccines people routinely promote to their employees and their volunteers over the past 3 years, the numbers have been pretty steady. This is promoting, which vaccines do they routinely promote? Hepatitis B, flu, are the other two big ones, and there's Tdap, less than 50%. When we asked what inspires facilities participation in this initiative, and we thought that was an important thing because we wanted to make sure we were using the right approaches and strategies to recruit people, the resources, our toolkits was number one, and grants, and then also partnerships, their ability to partner with us and other agencies to vaccinate their staff. So these are the observations and challenges and lessons learned for over the six-year period. Our observations, there's been a steady increase in the interest in healthcare personnel vaccination. When we first started, you know, we were struggling with 50, you know, fewer than 50 facilities, and now we've got almost 200. Most healthcare personnel employers offer the vaccine for free. The knowledge remains a barrier, and then it's really difficult to measure vaccinations facility specific. So in Maryland now, hospitals, acute care hospitals, are required to report their rates, but you know, long-term care facilities aren't, home health agencies aren't, so that's a challenge. Some persistent challenges, the lack of knowledge and acceptance from some of the healthcare personnel, the absence of a standard definition for healthcare personnel, even though it's been defined for us, it's defined differently within different facilities, and then some facilities don't keep records in that manner, and also the low response rate. If you're trying to do any facility-specific rates, it's really difficult if you have a low response rate for the wrap-up survey, and we need to figure out ways to increase or to persuade people to complete that. And maybe if they haven't completed the wrap-up, maybe they're not eligible to enroll in the subsequent year. Other challenges are reporting areas. We ask errors. We ask people to provide exact numbers, and then they give us an approximation or a percentage, a change in the denominator from year to year, so we don't have exactly the same number of facilities participating. A facility may participate 1 year, and then not the next, and then the following year, so it's really difficult to be able to measure that over the long haul. And then a change in facility representation. So the person who completed the survey at the beginning may not be the one who completes it at the end, and the person may not have even been there and won't even know what actually happened during the initiative. So those are the challenges. So these are the lessons that we've learned in the past. The profile of a winning facility, a facility that does a really good job, they offer free vaccines on site, they have standing orders, they ask people to sign a declination if they refuse to be vaccinated, they have more than three ways of promoting vaccine to their staff, they have more than two ways for administering the vaccination, so they may have scheduled clinics and rolling carts and you know standing clinics. If they've applied for one of our grants, they were more likely to have really high rates, and if they offer incentives to their staff. So these are lessons learned. Most healthcare personnel, they know that being vaccinated is the right thing to do. They're just not all doing it. We learned that support and promotion from the top is really important, and that large and small incentives work, because some people have just, awarded pizza parties to a department, and that has been enough to inspire people. And so you don't necessarily need a $100 gift certificate, $100 bill, although that's my preference. So the lessons that we've learned, again, that we feel like this should be a year-round effort. We found ourselves putting so much effort and time into flu, and then we'd rest. But if you get off the radar screens of people, and so it's important to do this year-round and include all recommended vaccinations, not just put so much emphasis on flu, because they need to protect themselves and their families and the community and their patients from all vaccine-preventable diseases. That grants and technical assistance are valued. You don't think that $1,000 is going to go very far, but it does. And find a champion within a participant's category. We have a partner named Brenda Roop, who's like amazing, and she is our liaison to the long-term care facilities, and she gets them going and involved, and so it's really important to have a champion from each of these sectors. Finally, when measuring your rates, try to anticipate trends. We've had to change our survey from year to year, which is a little disruptive when you're trying to demonstrate trends, because we weren't anticipating what was to come. So our first year, we didn't even ask about some vaccinations outside of flu, and now we're asking about all of them. And then if you're asking people to report data, it's really important to work with them and remind them periodically that they should be keeping these data. And it's hard when you don't have staffing. So that's it. I just want to thank our Center for Immunization, the Planning Committee for the Healthcare Worker Vaccination Committee, and then